Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This is On the Ball on the United WeCast Network, and I am Rick Bucher. You can see me on FS1, hear me on Fox Sports Radio, and you can read me on the Fox Sports app and at foxsports.com. You can also follow me on X, the former Twitter, Instagram, and Threads at Rick Bucher. I'm a lot of places, but there's only one place you can hear me talking about story angles and perspectives that you are not likely to find anywhere else, primarily but not exclusively involving the NBA, and that is here. I might have mentioned at the end of my last podcast that I wasn't sure where I was going to go with this one, because you never know what's going to turn up. Well, Draymond Green did me a solid with his, what I'm going to say were off-the-cuff remarks about Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving after Irving's left-handed running hook from just above the free throw line at the buzzer gave the Dallas Mavericks an unexpected victory over the defending champion, Denver Nuggets. So let's be clear about one thing. And I know this was a little over a week ago now, so the event itself is dated, but the comments that Draymond made are not. They're very much current in what we say in the business, evergreen, which is a subject that just doesn't get old and feels as if it is developing. And you'll understand what I mean as we get into the conversation. So let's be clear about one thing about that shot. It was about as improbable of a shot as you're ever going to see. Kyrie, for those who may not know, is right-handed. And he does not shoot running hooks from anywhere, much less from outside the paint, even with his dominant hand. I would argue that he's never taken that shot before in an NBA game in his life. And if he had, I have to think someone would have remembered it, found the clip, and posted it by now on social media. If he had taken a shot even remotely close to it, with either hand, I have to believe we would have seen it by now. I've seen guards take rolling or running hooks. Brandon Pajemski, the Warriors rookie guard, has taken several, and the reason that I know that is because, as much as anything, it stood out that he took them. It's an old-timey shot, a throwback, if you will, and for me, immediately conjures images of Kareem and his goggles or Magic Johnson with his famous baby hook. They stand out today because they're so rare, particularly in this era of data-driven basketball. And how do you gauge the effectiveness or efficiency of something that so rarely happens? You can't. And so that's the first element of this, is that there was a lot of reaction, not just by Draymond, by others, and we will get to that. But something that is so unique and rare to make a declarative statement off of something that rarely, if ever, happens is sketchy. So what does this say about Kyrie, that he took that shot to win the game? Damian Lillard used it as proof that Kyrie is the most skilled player in basketball history, or in his words, the most skilled MF-er ever. And I guess I can see why he would say that. Not guess, I can see why he would say that. To take and make a shot like that with your offhand certainly takes talent. I would just say he's the most bold, crazy, confident, willing to try anything, experimentally minded player we've ever seen. It takes guts to take a shot like that. That you, with your offhand, to win or lose a game. Like that's a certain I don't give a bleep. So I don't know that I would say it proves he's the most talented player in the league, considering the guy he shot it over, Nikola Jokic, I believe, has taken that and an array of other atypical shots and has made them at an amazingly high clip. And more than once in some of the cases. The first one that immediately comes to mind is the three-pointer where he rears the ball back way behind his head and huge arc and ends up knocking it down. I feel like I've seen him hit that shot twice. I would feel different if I had seen or if I saw Kyrie take this exact same shot or something close to it and he made it again. But I digress. So there's Nikola Jokic, the guy that he scored over, that I'm thinking I would make a case is overall more talented than Kyrie. Game is more expansive. Or having seen all the wild shots that Stephen Curry has made, both in warm-ups and in games, that I'd give the crown to Kyrie as a result of that one shot? Probably not. But hey, to each his own. It was an amazing shot, and Kyrie is certainly one of the most all-around skilled players in the league. You get no dispute from me for that. He's in the conversation. Lillard's comment, though, didn't really attract all that much attention. Draymond Green, on the other hand, knew what he said would be talk show and social media fodder, even as he said it. And to be fair, the shot is what inspired Draymond to talk about Kyrie on his podcast. But he claims that the observation that raised eyebrows was something that he actually said to friends the night before the game between the Nuggets and Mavs. And this is what he said on his podcast. The world will try to run with this and make it something that it's not, because it's actually a compliment. But anyway, I said, referencing what he said to his friends, Kyrie Irving is the scorer that everyone, the world, thinks of Kevin Durant. Syntax is a little jacked up, but I know you know what he's saying. Continue, Draymond. And what I meant was, there are some things at times that you can do to make it tougher on Kevin. Why? Because he's 7 feet and he handles the ball a lot. If you time it right, you can press up on him and make it a little tougher. He has to turn his back or something, and that's presumably to protect the ball. Draymond continues, Kyrie Irving, you can't do anything to make it hard on him. He's one of the best three-point shooters, has one of the best mid-ranges, if not the best, is arguably the best finisher in the NBA. He has floaters with either hand, as you can see by that. He can finish with either hand. He can also shoot a mid-range jumper with either hand. And that's about as far as Draymond went on the elaboration. And the reason I bring this up is because Draymond also likes to talk about new media versus old media. And I, having been in the business for some 30 years, I suppose, am considered old media. Now, Draymond and I are on a first-name basis and have long had an amiable relationship. I get the sense that he respects me and my work. So I don't think when he's critical of old media, he's referring to me or he's taking shots at me. I'll have to ask him about that the next time I see him. Been meaning to, actually. Not that it matters at all that much in terms of how I feel about him or this entire subject. In any case, this item is why I'm not worried about the new media completely replacing the old media. New media, as in current athletes having platforms to express their views, is a welcome addition to the landscape. There's a lot of good stuff out there. Most of it, or at least some of it, is different and illuminating. Maybe not always in the way that the athletes think, but nonetheless, Draymond and Paul George and Gilbert Arenas and Pat Beverly and the Kelsey brothers are all producing content that in some way, shape, or form is bringing something to the table that you can't find anywhere else. I also like it because many of the insights that these players and athletes are giving are things that over the years I have said. They echo or confirm things that I've been sharing. But the new media also can be, and often is, incredibly sloppy and unbalanced. This idea that you're getting the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth because athletes are telling you, that there's no subjectivity or slant to what they're telling you, could not be further from the truth. There's more slant, because old media, we were told to at least try to be objective, to take our personal opinions out of it. Now, I know media today has changed a lot, and I'm subject to it. I mean, one point I was considered a reporter or strictly a writer, and now I'm far more of an opinionist. And I just talked to one of my former editors the other day, and who's still just retired, working for a newspaper. And he basically told his writers, he said, "I want your opinion now." He understood the landscape, that we get information so quickly, so immediately now, that to have somebody reporting, particularly in the case of a newspaper, reporting and writing straight news information that is now going to appear on somebody's doorstep or on their computer screen 7-8 hours, or just maybe even an hour or two after the actual event, has very little value. The value is in somebody who is there and seeing these things and has a history of having seen them and has an opinion, is now sharing an opinion and a viewpoint based on what they're seeing. That's fresh. That's new. That's different. Whether it, well, that obviously hasn't maintained the position of newspapers, but it's the only value that a news outlet can have now, is if the perspective has some sort of opinion to it. So it's not just athletes that are bringing that to the table. Everybody, to a certain extent, is bringing it. Now, how hard you work at seeing the other side's perspective and opinion, and or how hard you try to give a full scope on things, that is, to me, the difference maker in something that is going to give me a well-rounded perspective. Now, athletes have no reason to work that hard. First of all, they're already well compensated. And two, they've never been taught or mentored in how to do that. I mean, that takes work. And these guys already have, the current athletes already have a full-time job. So why would they be working that hard on having something balanced? They're not. There are also non-athletes, by the way, who I believe consider themselves part of the new media, who like to drag members of the old media, who believe that new media is going to replace the old media. Now, these are the members of the media that I don't have a whole lot of respect for, because this is your job, and you do have the time and reason to find out the other side and give a balanced view. And there's very little of that from what I see among non-playing, performing members of the media. Maybe I'm wrong. If there's somebody out there that I'm missing, please bring them to my attention. Be happy to consider their work. But that's not what I see. I see people sort of being lazy and taking the easy way in, and that we're going to take shots at the old media, you know, kind of like the athletes do, and we're going to side with the athletes because maybe we will engender the attention and audience that the athletes have. We're one of them. No, you're not. And first of all, old media, the version of media that existed when I started in the business, is already dead. Old media had very set rules on what kind of content could be distributed. Old media had a system of checks and balances that vetted any and all information that was disseminated as news, or even as opinion. And all of that is long gone. Even established places or institutions that we still attach as old media or define or recognize as old media. I have streamlined the process for putting out content. And by streamlined, I mean dismantled. Vetting, by and large, does not happen. And it certainly doesn't happen to the level that it once did. The safeguards for accuracy and balance and fairness are no longer in place from an institutional standpoint. The best that they attempt to do is to hire people with opposing viewpoints or positions or standard opinions. And that's really not the same, because then they just let them go hog wild in whatever direction. And as you can see, that's why we have the extreme viewpoints that we do, because you're trying to provide balance by providing the voices of extremists on the same level or opposing voices on the same platform. And those voices, in order to be heard, are going to tend toward being more extreme. Is that accurate? No, it's just extreme. Generally, when you go extreme, you're not getting balance. And so there are these platforms, not to go on and on about this, but these platforms are counting on you to read both opinions or both perspectives and then form your own. And while I try to do that, even I am not diligent about that. I consider that there is another view and that nobody's 100% whatever perspective they have. No, there's always an opinion or a slant to it. I build that into my thinking, but still, am I going to watch or read a ton of material from a side that I inherently don't buy or agree with? No. And I would say that most people aren't. So the safeguards for accuracy and balance and fairness are no longer in place from an institutional standpoint. And I can't help but shake my head at those who celebrate the death of mainstream media, because they are celebrating the elimination of those safeguards. Whether they know it or not, that's what they're doing. Those who like to suggest that the old news organizations were corrupt and weaponized their authority have no idea what they're talking about. It's the exact opposite. I've lived both. Today's media is more weaponized than ever because it has been left up to the whims of individuals, because it is so driven by opinion. Now, through my formative years on the planet, I like to think of myself as a liberal Republican, once I was old enough to think about such things. I believe in less government and institutional oversight, for whatever that's worth. I still believe that that institutional oversight and too much government can be suffocating and inefficient. But the erosion of individual integrity, regardless of political affiliation, now makes me believe that oversight and enforceable rules are essential for the common good. That we inherently, or at least people that are seeking power, are not willing to take care of the less fortunate voluntarily. And the way people act on social media has convinced me of that. I am blown away by how people treat each other on a regular basis. The majority of people using social media, it would appear, don't attempt anything close to balanced or fair perspective, or even decorum, or considering the other side. Most people I see using social media today use it as a cudgel, as a way to discourage anyone they disagree with from voicing an opinion, by savaging them when they share one, or telling them, delete your account, especially if it's different than their own. It's a free-for-all now. And those with bigger platforms, and thereby more influence, don't have any more oversight than the average person with 60 or 600 followers. rather than 600,000. Draymond's take on Kyrie and KD is just one example. Yes, we're getting back to the basketball now. Let's start with his complaint that his comment is going to be taken the wrong way before he even makes it. If you know that to be the case, then why are you putting it out there? Or if that is your concern, and you do feel there's value in what you have to say, why not go to whatever lengths necessary to be very precise in what you're saying, so that if what you say is taken out of context, you can simply say, listen to everything I said. I was very clear in what I meant. Here's the link. Draymond did not do that. After acknowledging that saying Kyrie was actually what the world thinks KD is as a scorer would cause a reaction, he then says, it's actually a compliment. But anyway, okay, what? That's actually a compliment? Okay, I'm listening. To whom? Kyrie or KD? I can certainly see it as a compliment to Kyrie, but that doesn't require an actually in the setup. That's who you are complimenting in making the statement.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
So we could surmise that ourselves. Is it a compliment to KD? How so? That I need to hear, because that may change why you're making this comparison, or that the comparison isn't what most people would take as derogatory toward KD. He's not, essentially, I mean, I don't think I'm putting words or spinning it. You're saying KD is not who the world thinks he is. Kyrie actually is what the world thinks KD is. He doesn't explain any of that. Which, if handing out a compliment is actually what you intend, and you're pretty sure no one is going to understand that, you might want to try a little harder to show why it is one. Again, he didn't do that. He just rolled right into the statement he expected to be inflammatory, which is that Kyrie is the scorer that the world thinks KD is. Now, if he had an editor, he had somebody that he was working with, somebody who would vet or listen to his comments, they would raise this question that I just raised. And maybe he could address it. And then whatever was put out there would have more thought and balance to it. That, in a nutshell, is how old media, old mainstream media worked. Is you didn't just broadcast, or you just didn't record or write and then throw it out there for consumption. Somebody played sort of a devil's advocate and said, have you thought about this? Or what about this? Or I think you forgot to include this, or this needs more elaboration. So none of that happened. And saying that Kyrie is the scorer that the world thinks KD is quite the statement. I was very interested in hearing what he meant by that. And his explanation started with sharing how it's possible to make KD take a tough shot because he's 7 feet tall and you can press up on him and force him to worry about protecting the ball. That is a point I have made a number of times going back to KD's days in OKC. I've never liked running a play for KD where he catches the ball and goes one-on-one face up from the top of the three-point arc for this very reason. As a 7-footer, he has a naturally high dribble, which means the ball is going to be more exposed to be tipped or picked than it would be for someone smaller. And if it is at the top of the key facing up like that, it is an easy and instant fast break layup going the other way. It's an all or none proposition. And if you're putting KD in that spot, to win or lose a game, you're not being the most efficient that you can be. You're basically, this is all or none. And you're leaving yourself, I believe, far more vulnerable than you need to in that situation. It's why KD was so effective with the Warriors catching the ball in the mid post. One or two dribbles, he could be at the elbow or the baseline for a pull-up jumper. He didn't have to cross over, and he could protect the ball as he took those two dribbles. He could even get to the rim if the rotation was slow or defender fell asleep or overreacted. But he could do that in open space. But Draymond didn't even give us all of that. Or describe exactly what kind of scorer the world sees KD as. An unstoppable scorer? I don't have a sense the world thinks that, but maybe. Or is it as a clutch scorer? Since all this was sparked by Kyrie hitting an unorthodox buzzer-beating game winner. Draymond doesn't say. It almost feels like a self-fulfilling prophecy to suggest his comment will be taken the wrong way or too far by leaving so much vagueness around the comment. Draymond does not go into much more detail than KD is 7 feet tall, and you can pressure him before moving on to Kyrie and how you can't do anything to make it hard on him. Which, again, is an extraordinary statement for anybody who has followed Kyrie's career. He ain't Michael Jordan. So it's not completely accurate. We've seen defenders force Kyrie into taking tough shots. What I would say Kyrie has, and I believe Draymond would agree with this, is the ability to get to more places on the floor, on the dribble, with the ball, and thereby take a greater array of shots than KD can. But I would argue that is because of Kyrie's size and his handle, along with his ambidexterity, as much as it is his shot making. Here's an important distinction, and one that if Draymond were being totally honest, he would have addressed. And no, I'm not talking about the fact that they were former teammates and they got into it and all that. Although that wouldn't be bad if that had been mentioned at some point. I know people are going to say whatever. And just acknowledge that there was a time when you guys weren't boys, and there's still the sense that while you've made peace, you're not. It's not like Draymond's relationship with KD is on the same level that his relationship with LeBron appears to be. Again, another guy that he competed with and at one point had words. But if Draymond were totally honest, this is what he would have addressed. That Kyrie can take a greater array of shots, and therefore, arguably, it is harder to keep him from getting off a shot than KD. But that is not the same as saying that he is a better scorer than KD. That is just flat out, categorically, wrong by any metric, measure, or anecdote. Let me run down very quickly why. KD is a four-time scoring champion. Four times he was the most prolific scorer on average in an 82-game season. Kyrie has never finished higher than 8th in any one season in scoring. He has, in short, not come close to being the league's top scorer in any one season. Now, sometimes, of course, a player may not reach the same heights as another player, but overall, they are more consistent or efficient. But not in this case. KD is 6th in career average scoring. And Kyrie is 28th. Okay, what about efficiency? Kyrie has KD in a career three-point shooting percentage by a smidgen. 39.3 to 38.7. That's a half percent. And overall field goal percentage, KD is at 50%. Kyrie is at 47.3. Pretty good for a guard. Just as three-point shooting for a seven-footer who didn't play with LeBron but played with Russ, hasn't always had a great setup point guard to play with, That's pretty good. The KD is that close in three-point shooting. But Kyrie deserves credit. 47.3 for someone his size. That's a pretty impressive overall field goal percentage. Free throw shooting. Kyrie has KD by a 0.02 percentage. But KD gets to the line and knocks down twice as many free throws as Kyrie does. I'll take the guy who gets there twice as much, considering the slight difference in overall percentage. KD scores way more from the free throw line than Kyrie does, bottom line. Finishing at the rim, over the last five seasons, KD has shot 80.8%, finishing at the rim. Irving, 67%. Again, pretty damn good for a guard, 6'2", 190-pound guard. But nonetheless, if we're just looking through a clear prism of which player does what best and we're not grading on a curve because of size, then KD, far and away, is the better finisher at the rim. I don't care how much he uses his left hand versus his right hand. So, whatever Draymond was trying to say, the idea that Kyrie is the scorer that the world thinks KD is has nothing to do with actually scoring. KD is a better scorer than Kyrie, no matter how you slice it. What is striking about all this is that you would think someone who plays the game wouldn't grade on a curve for a player's size, or how what they do looks, especially a player who thrives in that very way, as Draymond does. It doesn't always look good. It's just Draymond gets the job done. But instead, he's acutely aware, or I would expect that he would be acutely aware, of a player's overall impact and effectiveness. That's what he would judge. That's the comparison that he would make. That's what I would expect. Someone who experiences what players do firsthand in competition. That's what I would expect that he would be aware of. As a pro, in any field, getting the job done is first and foremost, not how it looks. I wouldn't expect a pro to be swayed by narrative or perception that a smaller player is somehow better because his degree of difficulty is greater. And that is what I feel drove Draymond's comparison. But this is the real question that Draymond's claim or observation raises for me. If Kyrie is the scorer that the world thinks KD is, why isn't he a better scorer? Why don't we think of him as being a killer in the clutch, if it's that? Or why do we not think of him in the same way that we thought of Steve Nash in his 50-40-90s and Steph Curry? Like, why do we not think of him as such a precise scorer? And this, I believe, is where the idea that you're going to get a more accurate, unvarnished view of the game from athletes is a lie. Because depending on the relationship, athletes are as prone, if not more so, of either going easy on a player they like or are boys with, or being overly savage with a player that they don't like or don't respect. This is my explanation for why Kyrie is not the scorer that KD is, because of his decision making. What makes Jordan the greatest scorer of all time is that he so consistently took the best shot he could create based on how the defense was playing him. He didn't just have the full array of mid-range, finishing with either hand, changing direction, changing speed, pull up, catch and shoot, the footwork, the post game. He didn't have a full toolbox, but when he reached into it, he knew exactly, I don't know what percentage you want to put on it, but very high percentage, he always grabbed the right tool. He saw the biggest gap, the biggest weakness, and he exploited it. And I've seen some people who feel like I'm a Jordan stans, that I'm spent a lot of time defending him or talking about his game and why LeBron's doesn't really compare, or Anthony Edwards, anybody who's compared to him. You want to call me that? Fine. I saw him play. I saw his entire career. I saw what he did to the league. I saw how he played. I saw it. I saw it in person. And when I wasn't there in person, I watched it. And all these other guys that are being compared to him, I've watched their entire careers too. I'm not making this up. I'm not slanted. I get the sense that most of the pushback I get in these comparisons are from people who just started watching the current players. And that's their frame of reference. And then they've gone back and watched some of Jordan, or they've seen highlights or whatever. They didn't see the full breadth. I saw him, in some cases, I was seeing him every day for stretches. And the same with these guys. Seeing them every day, or seeing them behind the scenes, seeing them in the game, seeing them in practice. I've seen it. And that's what my comparison is based on. I'm probably the least slanted I could be, because I've seen all of it. And I take into account that the game has changed. But fundamentally, you're not going to get better than Jordan. You're just not. You can talk all about three-point percentage and whatever you want. He wasn't this. He wasn't that. It wasn't part of the game. It wasn't something he worked on. It was actually frowned upon, to be honest. Attacking the rim, getting as close to the rim. The whole idea of getting as close as possible to the cup before you shot, that was the mindset. In the same way that we've kind of reversed the other way. Now we think about, yeah, you got a layup, but hey, analytically, percentage says you got a wide open three, that's what you should take. That was not the mindset. And anybody who thinks that if that was the mindset, that Jordan wouldn't have excelled at it in the same way he did in the other mindset, I don't know what you're basing that on. The man was obsessed and a perfectionist and never satisfied, and that's what drove him. So the idea that he wouldn't have become great in this era, wouldn't have taken the same approach, there's no basis for believing that. When he had the ball, he had an array of options, but they were all principally sound, and he could make them with outrageous efficiency. Kyrie doesn't always take the best shot. Sometimes he settles. Sometimes he tries to do too much, raises the degree of difficulty beyond what he's capable of delivering. The shot that inspired all this is actually a case in point. Draymond said it himself. Kyrie is crazy, he said, for taking that shot. We are lauding and celebrating him because he made it. But what if he had missed? Wouldn't we have been saying the exact opposite? Wouldn't we have been saying, what the hell was that? We would have had to ask, have you ever taken that shot before? Why? What inspired you to take that shot? It would be one thing if Kyrie realized, this is the only way I can get a shot off. But as Draymond pointed out, Kyrie appeared to have that shot in mind the moment he caught the ball. Conversely, if Kyrie had taken one of his pull-ups or a step back, some shot we've seen him take plenty of times and missed, we would have, or at least I would have, thought, oh well, it was a good shot. He got it off against the 7-footer with incredible length and wingspan, and it just didn't go down. All right. That does it for this episode of On the Ball on the United WeCast Network. Please rate and review the show on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Don't know where I'm going to go in the next one, although something did come up to me in doing TV last week. A lot of tribalism in sports today, more so than I've ever thought. And I was exposed to it in part because of some of the subjects that we got into. And I don't know if I want to spend a whole episode on that. I don't know if you guys want to listen to a whole episode on that, but it did strike me. We also were on the cusp of Golden State Warriors at the Houston Rockets breathing down their necks. What would it mean if the Golden State Warriors somehow not only fell out of the playoffs or didn't make the playoffs, but didn't even make the play-in at this stage? Maybe something we have to get into. That will be decided in the next couple of days. In the meantime, as always, thanks for listening.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.